Alright, have you got Audacity and Ardour and all those stuff turned on?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm just using GNOME Recorder.
Okay, cool. Are we going to record some silence?
Yeah, that's... No, we don't need to record any silence.
Oh, why?
Why?
What? Who's that?
It's me! Okay. Austria's rubbish, so I've come home. So can I have a job, Graham?
Of course you can, Mike.
Brilliant.
Just to clarify, we can't record silence because we're in a pub.
Ah, cheers.
Oh, yes. Cheers.
It's Christmas.
For this festively themed podcast. And
happy Festivus, Mike, to all Seinfeld fans.
Mike is sadly unable to let go of us.
I just had to come back.
So he's come back for...
Even with my lederhosen on.
Podcast Series 3, Episode 24.
Oh,
in this episode, we'll be talking about the news that WebOS is going open source and that Chrome is apparently the most secure browser.
Cool.
There, we've got our usual favourites, Discovery of the Week, Rants and Raves.
Can't wait for that.
Which I think is going to be two raves this time, because we're all so happy.
We thought, we're feeling so positive and up for it.
We are. Nothing to do with the alcohol.
We might mess up the feng shui of the podcast. Okay.
Speaking your brains and the open ballot. If you like the sound of this...
I do. You can buy the latest.
You can buy the latest magazine at... If you like the sound of this, you can buy the latest magazine, but I don't have any further information about that other
it's
than to say
tinyurl.com/LXF offer.
That's the subscription URL.
Well, that's what you were saying.
Well, no, I was going to say that it was available off the shelf in all good news agents.
I'm sorry. You see, this is why I shouldn't come back.
This is why you should never have left.
I'm going back to Austria now.
Interesting. Lee, I'm not going to be able to edit this.
Why not?
Because there'll be continuity errors with the background music.
That's true. So we've got to wing it from here onwards. So you heard that, listeners.
Nobody jan, swear.
Got to be good.
I said no swearing, John.
Okay, so let's get this started. It's time for news. And in the last 2 weeks, actually surprisingly little as far as we can remember happened.
Well, I think lots of things, it felt like lots of things happened, but we can't remember any of them.
So if we've ignored some big news story, like, I know Linux died and there's no longer a Linux kernel, then, comment and tell us. But otherwise, WebOS got open sourced by HP.
That is massive news.
I think that's huge. But I don't know what's going to happen to it, because what happens to a mobile OS without a hardware platform to run on?
But didn't they say they're going to make tablets now? They've on the Verge website, they were interviewing someone from HP who said, we're looking at possibly putting this on tablets.
I think they said next year they're going to have two Windows 8 tablets. And then they said in 2014 they might look at how...
In 2014?
Yeah, right.
2013. Yeah. And it basically, it was... I mean, the whole thing feels like we've got to dump WebOS. How can we do it with the best possible PR kind of twinkle? Mm,
yes.
And also, I think financially, they don't have to write off WebOS, which looks really bad in their accounts. If it becomes a free software project,
they've got to do it carefully, because there's a history of this. Netscape just dumped the Mozilla source code on the internet. What happened? It took ages for Firefox to appear and get that going again. OpenOffice, big bunch of source code, took years before it actually started to get polished and get some performance issues sorted out. So just by putting it out there, I don't think it's going to magically become a wonderful OS.
But I think the employees are going with it. I think it's going to be spun into an enterprise.
Cool.
Or some of them are going to leave. Maybe the people who work on WebOS.
Right.
So there's a chance, possibly, that it becomes like Mono, Mono leaving Novell. That in fact, with an enterprise, small business attitude, they can make WebOS pretty good.
Incidentally, Xamarin, the Mono company that Miguel de Casa started with the other Mono developers from Novell, they're actually making a profit and breaking even. Yeah,
that's good.
That is brilliant.
I think that's really cool. That's good news.
There should be more small open source companies doing good stuff.
There is a call for running .NET applications on multiple platforms. I'm still unsure. WebOS does look really cool. I've never had the chance to play with it, but it looks great. But whether or not people really want it...
I saw a piece the other day about WebOS being used. Someone, with the help of HP engineers, stripped out all of the metal components from the touchpad so that it could be used in the same room as an MRI scanner.
Oh, really?
That's cool.
And then they set up the software to take the live feed, I think, from the MRI scanner, so they could control the scan from within the room, which you can't do without, because of the metal and, various things. So I guess maybe there's a niche market there for JavaScript and HTML, developing applications should be quick.
There are several things that provide a similar kind of interface. I mean, what did Migo become? Whatever that word
Tizen.
Was.
Tizen. Yeah. Tizen. Yeah. I
mean, why can't everyone just get behind one? I mean, I can see why it doesn't happen.
It's this a distro is, situation, yeah, isn't yeah, it? Yeah. And, I'm going to make my own. Hey!
But WebOS needs some kind of raison d'être.
Yeah.
It needs a reason to still be around.
I think it has to have something that it clearly does better than Android, because that's what we'll be going up against. An open source, especially Linux-based mobile OS.
Being truly open source would be a good thing. You know, actually... Yeah. I don't want to say truly open source, but maybe, you know, at least acts in the spirit, not just by the word of the license.
That's not going to happen unless there's some motivating force behind it.
No, that's true. Like, yeah, raison d'etre.
It could just be that HP owns loads and loads of patents, which keeps WebOS on the safe side of the patent wars.
Oh, that'd be interesting, yeah.
So it might not have any technical advantage, but...
Yeah, I suppose that... if they bought Palm went back a long way. There's probably some patents there.
Yeah, that's true.
But also in the news this week is the last 2 weeks. Apparently Chrome is the most secure browser, Firefox the least, even less secure than Internet Explorer.
Really?
The latest Internet Explorer, apparently. But it was a study funded by Google, so that Chrome came out top is perhaps... I mean, I know it does have really clever stuff that Firefox lacks. I think Firefox is lacking a lot of modern security features.
I think the sandboxing
is
vital.
Yeah, that's the main one. And, you know, the separate processes for separate tabs and stuff. I think Firefox lacks that, which is probably the main takeaway point from the story.
Yeah, I'd say Lynx is probably the most secure browser. I mean, it all depends what you're...
The trouble is you can only get so far with Lynx. That's why I find it so frustrating. You know, JavaScript always seems to pull it down.
Absolutely. I think one of the scary things there is that if Internet Explorer has fewer recorded vulnerabilities, because we're all used to it being a heaping pile of rubbish. Oh, for many years, it wasn't updated properly. Microsoft didn't care. They'd won the browser war, so they let it rot. But with Firefox and Chrome getting so much of the market, they had to be active, and now they might be really working hard on it, and there's no room for complacency there. I'd still steer away from IE. I don't even use Windows, but I'd still recommend everybody not to use IE, but perhaps that's just more of a relic of the past.
I think that probably is a relic of the past, because, you know, 7 was not great, 8 wasn't bad, it was getting better, but 9 is really good.
And they're forced to compete, yeah.
Yeah, which is really good news. I am worried about Firefox starting to lose market share, though, because I think Mozilla's the only browser manufacturer whose interest is people using the web.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah,
Internet yeah. Explorer and Chrome, they're both interested in getting people online
and
for
all
ads.
All Google is interested in is enforcing its own dominance.
Yeah, and getting...
Making a greater monopoly.
And getting more people to look at their ads.
Yeah, that's true.
It really showed, because not that long ago with the whole Do Not Track, trying to get Do Not Track pushed into a standard, the Do Not Track header.
Yes, yeah.
Of all the companies who supported it, Google were part of a coalition of companies opposing it being made law that you have to respond to the Do Not Track header.
And they should have a veto on that kind of stuff, shouldn't they?
If only.
Topical.
But, you know, it just strikes me that they're, you know, I think the web is so important, the way it's going, access to information, privacy from shopping online. Having a company who cares about people and making a good web experience behind it, rather than a company who's trying to sell
advertising. I think you're describing Firefox 3.0.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of its evolution as a platform.
How do you mean?
Because that, before it was security and it was features.
Right, yeah.
Now, this personal freedom and this and your identity online could be its new strategy.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely. But yeah. I am worried that if they lose market share because their features don't keep up, that they have less influence and less, you know, force to push through the other changes that now need to happen.
But, you know, part of the rapid release cycle might be a problem in this. If you can announce a big new release full of features, say we've got X, Y, and Z, boom, this will revolutionise your web usage, and that's great. If you trickle out a new release every month with just a small handful of features, people aren't going to notice as much. There's a sense in release, early release often, but there's also a sense in waiting, building up a bit of expectation, going bang, and then millions of people download it.
I do think, though, Chrome didn't suffer from that problem at all. Like, that's the reason Firefox had to switch, was because it was losing mindshare. Well, I think, look forward to 2012, see what the future holds in store for Firefox and the web, and we'll see what happens next year. So Graham's not editing because of continuity errors, but laughing too hard to say that it's now time for Discovery of the Week.
Hooray!
I'll say it instead.
This is Graham's favourite section.
Yeah. Discovery of the Week, brought to you from the Westgate.
Yeah, quality ales at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Are they not? Oh.
Yeah.
In that case, brought to you from an anonymous drinking cavern.
The Little Green Tree.
Yeah.
It's a nice pub.
Yeah, that's a lovely pub.
Discoveries, then.
So, yeah. Do you use Linux anymore, Mike?
Lin. Well, I found out quite a lot in my OpenBSD box.
Oh, yeah.
But I actually, even though I've walked over the former Iron Curtain and travelled around various places in the last couple of weeks, I discovered something far cooler than those, and that's Ace Magazine, Advanced Computer Entertainment Magazine from the late 1980s. It used to give review scores out of 1,000.
Did it?
Wow.
How cool is that? Ace. Do you remember?
I have some vague. It didn't last long.
No, it only lasted about 3-4 years. Yeah. I can't remember who it was. I think it was EMAP. But you know the arguments that go on. If we give a distro 8 out of 10 and another one 7 out of 10 and we get 10,000 flames because of that. I think it'd be brilliant if we start rating things out of 1,000. So we give Debian 847 and Slackware 846.
But what will happen is that we'll end up giving every distro 800 out of 1,000.
Except for one, which give 801 just to watch people rage.
Well, do you remember Nick Veach always thought it would be a good idea to give a score in hex?
Cool.
FF.
Yeah, I think he meant as a, some kind of spell. This is a... I don't know.
Didn't Nick once give a review of 11 out of 10 for something just to annoy the ad sales people?
I once wanted to give a book 0 out of 10, but had an argument with our old editor, Paul Hudson, about this. He said I had to give it at least 1 because it exists, but I wanted nobody on the planet to buy this book because it was completely appalling. So I thought 0 out of 10 was fair. It's not worth anything.
Was that the Haynes manual?
The Haynes Linux manual.
By Mike Saunders.
Do not buy that book. Or do.
Other books are available.
Oh, well, my discovery is about a month old, and it's in the news section of the issue that we just sent, but it's the Desura Linux client for games. Hmm. I don't know why. I can kind of remember this coming up about 2 months ago and not thinking much of it, but having installed it and having also bought a few of the Humble bundles, I can now see what a brilliant little tool this is. It's basically like Steam for the Linux desktop. So... it's a portal to buying games, you know, with a single click and keeping them up to date and also installing mods. And there are about 60 or 70 or 80 titles for Linux
in
there.
That's cool.
And what's great is that they're all brilliant, strong, independent titles, the kind of thing that, you know, costs a fiver maybe and you can install the weekend and spend a few hours playing.
Mm.
And it's just so nice to have something like that that doesn't involve dependencies or... Ubuntu versions or anything like that. And if you do actually buy the Humble indie bundles, well, a few of them anyway, such as the Frozen Synapse or the Interversion bundle, you get Desura keys. They're very generous in that you just put in the keys into the web interface and the games are added to your Desura games list.
It's really cool.
That's pretty cool. 60 or 70 games as well. I mean, Linux is a gaming platform.
Yeah, you know, spend some money on the bundles and you've already got 10 or 11 brilliant games to play. And there's a new Humble bundle out this week, which has only been live. Yeah, it's been 24 hours, I think, or last night I got the email. And they've already taken over $1 million.
Good heavens.
And I actually don't know any of these games, but I've written them down. One's called Jamestown, Bit Trip Runner, Super Meat Boy, which I do know.
Super Meat Boy.
Shank, Night Sky HD plus K-Story, and Gratuitous Space Battle if you pay over the average price.
That sounds really good.
It sounds like a great Christmas bundle.
Price now.
I've not checked if they have Desura keys, but if they do, it would be an awesome thing to do over Christmas. So the fact that there's a great Linux games client, it really works. They should have made Steam because I think there'd be enough demand for it.
This is fantastic news for Linux, isn't it? It's Linux and games coming together. People used to scoff at Linux playing games.
But good fun games as well, you know, not...
Not black brown not FPSs.
Yeah, yeah. Some,
shooting people.
Yeah, it's not a beige gaming landscape. It's multicoloured.
And the whole portal is like a community-based thing. You can access the forums through the app. It's just an app, binary app you download. you know, and all the mods and everything, and it's all managed in a single interface. And, you know, rather than the Ubuntu Software Center selling games, I think everybody should just get behind this. It's also that apparently they're going to open source the client.
Brilliant.
This is awesome.
Respect. So they're doing everything right.
So I've got two discoveries this week. One is that apparently my dad told me that there's a pasty museum opened in Mexico.
What was that?
A pasty museum in Mexico. Yeah.
Where about?
I have no idea, actually. Well, I can't remember.
The next discovery then.
Yeah, we've talked about Mexican pasties before, haven't we?
So there's a there's a pasty museum in Mexico, and apparently they sell more pasties there than in Cornwall. But that's hardly surprising given
the whole of populations. Cornwall?
Yeah, shockingly, yeah.
Wow, not just North Cornwall. They sell more pasties in Mexico than the entirety of Cornwall.
Yeah, and I know this is hard to believe.
The sea's a shining sea.
Oh, I don't know.
You see, that is the thing. If it's original Cornish pasties.
No. How's it going, Graham?
New legislation.
No.
Yeah, not bad. Thanks.
Yeah, cool.
I'm about to have another pint, I think.
Okay, so that was one discovery. And my other discovery was that there's a program called ISO Hybrid. And it comes in the ISO Tools package. And it's incredible. You can download any ISO, run ISO Hybrid on it, and then you can DD the ISO image straight to your USB stick and it will boot.
That's cool.
And ISO Hybrid works instantaneously. You just run the command and hit enter and it's done.
Doesn't that replace everything that Mike did?
I'm not thinking about that. What I'm thinking about, in macOS, I can DD a floppy image or a CD image directly to a USB key without doing this, and it boots because they can emulate certain things.
Yeah.
A USB key can pretend to be a floppy drive or certain things. So I'm trying to work out what this program actually does. I'm sure it's cool, but
I don't know myself properly, but I do know that there's something to do with the CD-ROM file format and making the bootloaders work and stuff. And
it might change a few bytes in some blocks at the beginning, but the USB key is really flexible, and a good BIOS can pretend that the Datron is a CD-ROM or a floppy disk.
But I know a lot of distributions you can't just straight DD. It doesn't always work. But ISO Hybrid seem to make it work.
They should make them work. I mean, why wouldn't they do it?
That's all you have to do. It should be. But I thought that was really cool.
That is cool.
I hope it actually does something, because otherwise that's embarrassing, but you know.
Well, I've got two discoveries as well. The first one is that apparently more chimichangas are sold in the UK than in the whole of Mexico. That's one. The next one is that I discovered you can create a monster just by using Linux.
Oh, we know that.
Well, you can probably create more than one monster.
On the streets.
I never experienced it before. Anyway,
I've forgotten my password.
Is that line? Hello.
Anyway, yeah. So do you remember last podcast I complained about Unity and all that, and I was tempted to switch to.
Lots of people agreed with you.
Yeah, I know, because it's right. And so I did. Anyways, I had Ubuntu on my Linux box. Just gonna change it to Mint. Put the light distro CD on it, and my intention was to do a clean installation. But the live CD gave me the option of upgrading the Ubuntu installation that I had before.
Did it know it was Ubuntu? Was it saying Ubuntu? Yeah. We can upgrade it.
Yeah, so Mint detected it was Ubuntu. And just gave me the option.
You didn't think it was an old version of Mint?
No, it was a new version, of Mint. And so it did, but it created this Frankenstein's monster of a distro. It had the GNOME shell characteristics with the Ubuntu wallpaper and the background, and the same Ubuntu top menu bar, and all kinds of rubbish effects were going on the desktop. So
that's cool.
But I just did it just to see what might happen. But yeah, it creates, and also the mouse refused to work. I remember that. So it was really interesting, but later on I did a clean installation of Mint, which is brilliant, by the way.
I had that once. I had an Ubuntu installation that had the Kubuntu splash screen, the normal Ubuntu login screen, GDM, but Zubuntu as the desktop. So I didn't even know what distro to say I was running. It was a bizarre amalgamation.
That's like I got with Satanic Ubuntu. when I upgraded it, it kept the satanic splash screen.
Right.
But went for this really broken version of GNOME 3.
That's what happens when you install the satanic Linux. Well,
exactly.
It's written into your BIOS.
The machine has been possessed.
When you invite the devil onto your Intel Core i3
processor. Know the end in tears.
Did it delete everything but the Sisters of Mercy in your music collection?
That and Peter, Paul and Mary.
Yeah, you're right there.
I suppose I've discovered some stuff as well. I've discovered quite a lot, actually. First up, I upgraded a Linux Mint system in place. Rather than reinstall it with the CD, I decided to go for the... You update the list of in-apt sources and then run apt-get dist upgrade or whatever it is. But if you look on the official Mint page, the instructions for how to do it, the first thing you get is a message from Clem saying, do you really need to update? If not, don't bother.
Really?
Yeah. If your Mint system works and you're happy with it,
that's
leave
amazing.
It.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
That is really, really good.
So I ignored him and upgraded and attempted to upgrade and broke my system, so I had to then install the Ubuntu over the top of it. And I installed the KDE desktop packages, which are absolutely awful in Ubuntu. I didn't go for Kubuntu. I went for ordinary Ubuntu 11.10. Installed the KDE desktop package.
Why? Why did you do it?
I just to see. Actually, it's because I wanted a screenshot of how to burn an ISO
KDE. Oh, right, K3B.
But if you right-click on an ISO image in there, in this KDE-themed Ubuntu, it offers to open it in Bracero for you, which is the GNOME application.
Yeah. Mm.
So when that does open up, it looks terrible because it's all unthemed GTK against this lovely KDE4 looking backdrop. So it's not actually, it's just changed the skin. It's not really done anything else, and it gives you the Debian splash screen. There's the little, you know, the space rocket with that little swirl Debian logo behind it.
Which is really cool.
It is really cool, but it's not. It's not Ubuntu. It's all wrong. Anyway, so that's that. I also installed Gnucache the other day because I was writing a review of business accounts, which you can read all about in a forthcoming issue of Linux Format, LXF 154, which I think is going to be on sale...
6th of January?
6th of January.
Like wow.
Or thereabouts.
I look forward to that.
But just to get...
wherever I am.
Hasn't it got your awesome assembler tutorial in?
It's got the first part of my assembly language tutorial in, and there's something else I wrote for that.
A review of OpenBSD.
And
Code Concepts, did you do that?
No, I did something else. Because I did... That's terrible. Oh, it's got a tutorial on using XDoTool to automate your desktop.
That was brilliant, yeah.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks, yeah, that's it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to steal
that's great. I'm
sure adverts for the magazine are always good.
I'm sure Graham will have no problem editing out your gibberish. Yeah, that's right. The last thing was I installed business Gnucache to get a bit of context on business accounts, something to compare it with. Gnucache opens up. The first default screen is entirely grey, and it also loads up a tutorial. If it was better designed, it wouldn't need a tutorial. It would just make sense. It's like the instruction manual for the iPod. There isn't one.
But this is an accounting package.
But that's what makes business accounts so very, very good. And maybe I was spoiled by just having played with that recently. But
they have hit on something, I think.
They've done a really, really great job with it.
Gnucache doesn't try and hide any kind of double accounting or anything like that. It's all there. You have to do it and you have to make it work, which is... I used to use, actually, Gnucache for my own accounts, and I just gave up and just ended up putting all the numbers into a big spreadsheet and adding things up.
But that is GNU, isn't it? And we know that GNU means communism, so presumably they don't like all these financial transactions.
I do have some more discoveries, but our time's ticking on.
Well, they were great. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone. That was the best discovery of the week all year.
Yay, and I was here for it.
Mike, do you want to, for old time's sake, do the halfway reminder?
It's the halfway point of this podcast. Still to come, we've got a double rave. We've got a double rave in our ransom rave section, along with, of course, open ballot. And some Speak Your Brains, if anybody's emailed Graham. So evidently not.
Somebody did. A couple of people did, but I've just forgotten to print it out.
Okay.
Bring it with me.
Look forward to that in January, listeners.
Can we find out about the pasties business?
Later. Right. Later, sure.
You intrigued.
So it is time for rants and raves, but since it's the end of the year, we want to end on a high note. Graham suggested that we have two raves.
Yeah, I might go and get another pint.
Are you going to get another
pint? I think I'll go and get another pint. So you and Effie can
me and I'm just going to rave for a
while.
Well,
you can leave it.
Of course, now. Yeah. There's going to be a continuity here with the music, but we'll be back.
Now that everybody's gone to the bar, I'm going to take this opportunity to let you know, the listeners, what I really think of them all. I hate them, especially John.
So everyone's got a new drink?
Yep. All ready? Cheers.
Yep. Cheers. Cheers, Mike.
Hey.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, guys.
Cheers.
Hey.
You are all awesome.
You noticed even me. I'm fasting with Guinness.
Very nice. What? Empanada?
Empanada.
So what are we talking about?
So I think we're going to...
Linux.
We're gonna Linux, play. Eh?
I'm excited about this.
What, Jackie Chan?
No, about raving.
Oh,
about,
yeah.
About Jackie Chan.
About Jackie Chan.
I could rave about Jackie Chan for a minute.
Let's have Mike rave about Jackie Chan.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's Christmas. It's something different, isn't it?
Okay, so hold on a second, listeners, while I try and find the timer application on my phone. Sorry. Whistle while you wait. Okay, here we go, Mike.
It's almost snowing outside.
Jackie Chan is the second best person that has ever walked this earth after Johann Sebastian Bach. And a lot of people only know Jackie Chan from his sort of more recent American films where there's a lot of slapstick comedy in it and people falling over and jokes and stuff. That's fair enough. He's getting on a bit now. He's got a family. He's not as daring as he used to be. If you want to see the absolute pinnacle of Jackie Chan, look to the early to mid-80s. Things like Police Story 1, Project A, Meals on Wheels. Was it the way around? Wheels on Meals. And because at that point they had loads of disposable Hong Kong stuntmen they could throw around and do ridiculous things with, no workers' rights or anything, and they were incredibly daring, absolutely brilliant films to watch. And a lot of the accidents and mistakes you see in those films, they had to leave in because they couldn't use the actors again. These stuntmen were getting seriously damaged and they'd be in hospital for months or years after that. Yeah. So they had to leave these things in. Two people jumping out the top of a bus in Police Story 1, for example. So get back to the mid-80s if you want to see the absolute cream of Jackie Chan films. And there's 2 seconds to go, so hello.
That was awesome. Well done.
Rush Hour 3's got that that underwear model in, that French lass. That's quite good.
Hmm. Yeah. Does she do any stunts?
Can't remember.
Yeah.
I'm going to sound so boring now.
Yeah, back into the world of geekdom.
I'm quite excited about my rant, my rave, so no one minds.
No, go for it, John.
I'm going to time myself and just enjoy this moment of self-indulgence.
We'll see you over there when you're finished, okay?
So I'm going to rave about hash tables. I just discovered last night how they work. In Python, they're known as dictionaries. And basically, I'm going... Basically, a dictionary lets you get access to, like, you can have a million element dictionary and access any of those elements in like a split second. It wouldn't have to search through to find it. It could tell you in a split second if it contains that element. Very, very clever. Basically, what it does, it takes an array, which basically uses a, how did you describe it earlier? A difference? So it knows how large.
An offset.
An offset. It uses an offset, so it knows how large each element is, and then calculates from zero to the 10th element, like 10 plus 10, you know? And a hash table works, a dictionary works, by putting in a string, like, you know, my name, John, putting it for a function that returns a number, and then it can use the offset to figure out which bucket that name is in, because the result of a hash is the number of the array. Either way, look it up, it's very clever, it's very cool.
I'm still thinking about drugs.
So anyway, now I've had my moment, I'm happy and satisfied.
Hey.
Enjoy Christmas.
Can you do a What on Earth on it or something maybe one day? And I guess it's not really new technology.
I might do code concepts on it. I'm doing code concepts in the new year.
Do a code concepts on it, please. Then I can put them in MicOS.
Do we have to pay you if you keep coming up with ideas?
Only if I actually write about them. But then I couldn't write about hash tables or whatever it is anyway. So.
Okay, it would actually be the time for Speak Your Brains. But I haven't... A couple of people did send me some excellent Speak Your Brains, but I've not brought them with me. I'm sorry.
Were they really excellent? Were they like... Fewer than 8,000 words. Yep.
One of them was a rant about Pulse Audio, which was very good.
Oh, brilliant.
But I'm not going to spoil the surprise in the wording because I'll bring them to our next podcast, which kind of saves a bit of time on this one. And also,
I look forward to hearing it.
Doesn't make me look
on
so
the
bad.
Topic of Pulse Audio, earlier we talked about WebOS. I'm pretty sure that WebOS uses Pulse Audio, or at least GStreamer as its audio.
Oh, well, then. I'm not a fan of it anymore. Android!
So we'll skip Speak Your Brains and move straight on to the open ballot.
Or the ho-ho-hopen ballot.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the end of the year, well, it's the last podcast of the year, we thought we'd have a look back on what we think have been the really big success stories and what have been the big failure stories of Linux in the past year. And we've had loads of really cool responses. Loads of people have weighed in and let us know what they think. Conspicuous among the winners are Android, KDE4, XFCE, and Mint 12, and also GNOME 3.
It's brilliant. Andrew has actually tallied all of the numbers that people mentioned on a big piece of paper, and you can see them in... What do you call that new numbering system? It's really gone from my head.
It's when you
tally.
Is it just a tally?
You put a sticks, four sticks, and a dash through it.
Another one.
That's something I've always known, and now
there is a name
now
for
I need
it,
to
there?
Think. Anyway, sorry.
So the win votes were pretty much well spread. Android got 6, XFCE got 5, Mint 12 got 8. Only 2 win votes for the Raspberry Pi, which was surprising, I thought. But there's a clear winner in the losers category with 11 votes. Can anybody guess what that might be?
Is it Mike? Us losing Mike, I mean, not Mike
us
being
losing
a loser.
Mike, 3 people said that was a big loss of the year.
And that was, I admit, me posting those comments anyway.
No? Any clues?
I don't want to say because I can see it written
You can
down.
See. You,
well, I can guess that it's Ubuntu.
It is Ubuntu. Yeah. It's written here.
It must be true.
Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people said that Ubuntu was one of the big losers.
Why?
Well, Hyouch says that Unity losers for ramming a new desktop down the throats of long-term users. Miska says, as for a loser, I would go for Ubuntu. They made several pretty dumb decisions. Replacing referral code in Banshee. Oh, hang on, that's that's Mint. Johnny says, Canonical for forcing Unity on their losers, also by doing the usual thing of not contributing to upstream projects such as GNOME 3. Barry Van says, in terms of losers, I think Unity has to be it. It's slow, clunky, buggy, and uncomfortable. While I applaud Canonical's willingness to take a gamble, Russian roulette doesn't always have a happy ending.
Wow, that's a great comment.
Yeah. And it goes on. Who said that?
Who said that?
Steve Noobs says Ubuntu for getting sucked into the world of touch interfaces and in the process leaving many of its users feeling like they were touched in the wrong places.
That's a comment of the year, isn't it? Perfectly timed for
brilliant.
The last podcast.
So, is this the X-rated podcast?
So I think it's really interesting that Unity seems to getting all this hate, but GNOME 3 made it into the list.
I suppose no one's forcing GNOME 3 on you, are they?
Yeah.
Or Fedora.
Yeah, but hardly anyone uses Fedora compared to Ubuntu.
Well, actually, GNOME 3 made it into the list of wins and also into the list of losses.
So more mixed feelings about that.
An equal split about GNOME 3.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not as bad as Unity.
Yeah. That's obviously just people disliking change and some people thinking this is great and other people saying no, I don't like it, this is new. Whereas so Unity doesn't even have that saving grace.
Unity has no potential, whereas GNOME Shell people will settle into and enjoy it once they get used to it.
Well, the thing, Unity might be a really good interface on tablets. It might be a good interface on certain devices, but the idea of forcing this interface on desktop computers...
It's not a good interface on tablets or stuff, because you've got to hover your mouse over the top.
And anyway, who's got a tablet running a desktop version of Linux?
Yeah, exactly.
Where are these these people. It's something we've talked a lot about, and but it's Ubuntu. It's not an experimental distribution. It's the most popular Linux distribution for people who don't want or care about Linux in particular. You know, they expect a certain experience, and Unity just is not it.
And the drive to change for change's sake, just because it seems cool, is scary. You might say there are problems with the current, you know, the established desktop metaphors, but they're like that for a reason. They've evolved. They've come to a certain way.
Yeah.
And to just throw it all in the air and say, well, like, imagine if we did it completely differently. Most people I speak to don't care about that. They care about internet security. They care about finding where their files are, but not, you know, about managing Windows and stuff. People are used to the taskbar metaphor now. We don't need to throw it in the air.
So that's Ubuntu. That's the biggest loser. The next biggest is GNOME 3. For whatever messed up reasons that is, but the next joint biggest losers are Firefox for their crazy release schedule and us for losing Mike.
That's not fair.
And, if there's anything we could have done, we would have done it.
What to say, Firefox?
Yeah.
Yes. Espada V8 says losers us for losing Mike. So says Toei, I think. Other pseudonyms that Mike's been using.
Yeah, check the IP addresses.
I think RMS says I'm glad he's gone. I don't know about Mike. So he's a lone voice of dissent there.
Thanks, so what would we choose? What would you choose, John, as your highlight and lowlight of the year?
That's putting me on the spot.
Well, I thought about it on the walk over, and my low light this year has been the number of patent disputes, and specifically Apple. I know it's not exactly Linux related, but this world of patents has taken on a whole new level of cynicism and sinisterness that I just can't believe. You know, you read some of the descriptions of Apple in the Australian court of what they think a non-competitive tablet should be, and you think, is this not real grown-up adult conversation?
Just for our listeners, not rectangular,
not
black, without
not
a bevel,
thin.
Not
thin. Not with rounded corners.
Not with rounded corners. So, you know, take what you want from that.
If that kind of stuff is taking up, you know, well-trained people's time and costing hundreds of thousands of dollars to maintain, then I find that utterly depressing.
It could actually turn to be a really good thing, though. It could get so ridiculous along these roads that full, massive reform of the patent system.
But everybody's making money out of it. Everybody's making money out of all of these arguments.
The lawyers are making money out of it, and the lobbyists are making money out of it.
And the patent people are making money out of it. Apple are making money out of it.
And so, you know, except for the tech company and the users who suffer.
Those are the vested interests.
That's a good point, yeah. I always hoped it would get to this stage in a way that it would get so silly that people were suing over one another over rectangles and things that, you know, the whole system would just basically fall apart. There'd be a war and everyone would say, this is silly, we've got to get back to... But maybe, like you say, it won't because of all the vested interests. I
mean, we're used to anti-competitive business practices from Microsoft from a few years ago, but... I don't know, I expect Apple to do better than that because their hardware is so nice. They don't need to...
No, exactly.
They don't need to cheat to win.
Yeah.
It's like Maradona in the 1986 World Cup. So disappointing. The best player in the world. But, you know, just marred it all with one moment of madness.
Are you including the fact that Steve Jobs has spent so much money trying to destroy Android? Is that what you're talking about?
That as well, and the fact they stopped HTC phones being sold, and, you know...
That's what it comes down to.
Everything.
But I'm glad to see Apple getting some of their medicine in Germany with Motorola at the
But it's just all insane.
It is all
it's
insane.
It's insane, as Peter Andre once said.
I wanted to stop, but at the very least...
Well, I think, imagine if you applied the situation now back to the earlier days of computing, so the 70s and early 80s, people would have been scared of doing everything. People would have been scared of releasing these original computers, the Spectrum, the C64, the Apple II, that set all this home computer revolution going. People would have been terrified.
And isn't that just why people hated Microsoft and the policies?
At the time, they were buying lots of smaller companies.
Apple becomes that sort of company.
At the time when I didn't really like Microsoft, it was because they bought smaller companies and stifled their innovation. They just actually swallowed them up without releasing it any time. But that also brings me on to what I think has been the highlight of this year, and that's the Raspberry Pi. Mm. Talking about getting back to those old pieces of kit that, you know, don't cost much and you can have complete control over. I do think the Raspberry Pi has got everything. It's cheap. You know, if we can get it into schools, people can experiment with it. People can break it. People can do whatever they want with it. You know, it's a platform that can really transform computing and education and small devices. And it's Linux. You know, it's brilliant.
I think I have to agree with you on both counts, especially because I'm really looking forward to the new year. We've got plans for me to go out to Cambridge. And
yeah,
we've done it. And we're going to do a cover story on Raspberry Pi and how it's developed and what you can do with it. I'm so excited about going up and meeting them.
It's just it's the one laptop per child thing got us excited for a while. We thought it would be something like this, but it really looks like Raspberry Pi is going to come through. You know, the price hasn't gone up. The price has stayed the same. You know, it's brilliant.
I mean, I guess decoupling the screen and the storage and all of that
sure.
has made a big... But it's not necessary for their target audience.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. So. They're doing... I'm so excited.
I think it's brilliant. You've already thought of some ideas you could do with it in terms of music machines and stuff. Does anyone know what David Braben's still got to do with this now?
I don't think a lot.
Probably his name, you know, is enough. You know, he probably, speaking for Braben, but he probably does think that, you know, we need to change the way that people are educated about ICT and all that kind of stuff. And people complain, oh, these are £600 computers sold to us by specialists.
Yeah.
You know, we can't experiment with them.
With all this.
Here's a 25 quid thing, you know, play with it, play around with it, see what you can get out of it.
Really interestingly, my background is theology and...
Is that really interesting?
It is really interesting. It is, because I find that programming is not just about teaching, you know, logical thinking and, you know, it is about teaching logical thinking. It doesn't teach you technology per se. It actually really makes you a much better writer and much better critical writer and thinker. It can help you in all kinds of other aspects of life. So seeing this getting into school curriculums at an early age...
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. That's a very, very good point.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah
it's probably the highlight of my year as well, because I like the idea that you can get a computer which you can understand fully. You know, when we grew up, we had our 8-bit computers specced to C64s. You could get a book and understand every single byte and every instruction that the CPU used, absolutely everything of it. That's almost impossible now with complicated PCs and complicated Unix operating systems. One of the things I've tried to do with MyQuest is make an operating system where you can understand every byte of it. So the idea that you could get this piece of hardware and get closer to that goal, own it, and say, I'm going to rip it apart, I'm going to poke these bytes into this and do as much as possible. It's my machine. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's Phelan Whiteley agrees pretty much with you, Graham. He says, I think the big winner with a Raspberry Pi, and then contrast that with the whole iTunes, Mac, pad devices attitudes of you only consume digital content will be the biggest loser. Thankfully, it looks like the Raspberry Pi guys have actually ignited some serious interest in getting education and how to program back in the headlines.
Yeah,
and there was an announcement from Michael Gove, wasn't there, recently, the Education Secretary, about the need to get programming on our school curricula.
This
but that's
go wrong if
that,
okay,
that,
yeah.
but that won't work with it. Yeah,
no. Objective C, Objective C,
Visual Basic.
Teach them. Oh no!
Teach them assembly language.
Teach them scheme. Teach them scheme.
Come in from the wilderness, John.
I think Scheme... I've been learning to program myself lately, and I've been learning Scheme as part of it, along with several other languages, just bits and pieces of. And Scheme is awesome.
I thought he was talking Blathering.
No.
But is Scheme a dialect of Lisp?
It is a dialect of Lisp.
Does that mean lots and lots of brackets?
It does, but if you use, you know, Vim or anything with bracket matching and pretty printing, it's fine.
So you have to use...
Launch Vim and type colon set
editor.
Space Lisp, and it's fine. Vim is... Oh, no. Vim is a winner.
Can you spend the 8 weeks learning all this key combos?
It has taken me a while. I've only just found out how to paste it into the system clipboard, so...
Can we have just one more loser from the readers, and then we'll get back into the winning. Back into the winning spirit.
By winning.
Absolutely. Epically winning. Jerubi says, Tux Radar... Oh, hang on, that's a win. Tux Radar is a win for continuing to be hilarious, insightful and informative.
Good work, Graham.
Brackets, especially Andrew.
Someone check the IP address, really.
Also, in the losers section, RMS for blasting the integrity of free software activists with his ever-controversial and off-colour comments. Brackets, I'm not glad he's dead, I'm glad he's gone. Close brackets.
That was a low point.
That was an extremely low point. But back to winning.
Yay!
Barry Van says... No, not Barry Van. Steve Newb says, XFCE is a big winner in my book. It is now my go-to environment when I'm looking for a new distro to test out and takes pride of place on my desktop and laptop. And Eric the Penguin also says, XFCE 4 is also a win as I tried GNOME 3 and instantly switched to XFCE 4.
I think a lot of people have discovered XFCE. Yeah, I switched to it a few years ago, but I mean, it has become the sort of de facto standard GTK.
Yeah, you don't want KDE for a good reason. You know, people don't. It's a big change, just like GNOME 3.
Yeah.
You know, you want something a bit more like GNOME 2, and XFCE is it.
Exactly, yeah. I respect KDE if you want that sort of level of control, but those people who don't want all these pseudo tablet.
KDE's always been KDE. Yeah, that's the way it's always been.
KDE has a reason to be, but if you don't want all these pseudo tablet environments changing everything, you just want a good GTK desktop, then XFCE provides that. So.
I think some of the winners are going to be also the listeners of this podcast, because it's incredible what a couple of pints can do.
What's the discussion?
You're my best mate in the
world. I hate to think how the music and the sliding of the glasses.
Yeah.
We apologise in advance. Click, basically, click of the cameras. We're having a good time. And
the drumming of the fingers on the tabletop. Yeah. So, more winners. Android, obviously.
Android. Yeah, Android's doing
Android.
Well.
Are they winning for us, or are they just winning for themselves?
That's a good question, especially with the whole carrier IQ issue.
Yeah, maybe that's a separate issue for a new podcast. But Android definitely have done a lot of winning, as have Linux Mint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about losers? The Euro song?
We've just been talking about the losers. We've moved on to winners, so we can end it on a positive.
You didn't get the chance to say anything.
Interesting.
What was that you saying, Effie?
What?
Along with Linux Mint, sorry guys to pick up your argument. Along with Linux Mint, I also think this has probably been the year that Arch has come into the mainstream.
Yes.
Linux users.
Yeah.
Thanks to you, John.
Thanks to... No, it all started actually. Linux Action Show, I think, featured Linux Mint, Arch, and did a review of Arch towards the beginning of the year, at the end of last year. I think from there it's really gone from strength to strength, and people recognising it for great fun. Pretty easy to use, stable, up-to-date distribution, and it's really nice to see it getting attention.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, it's great.
Love this music in the background.
Yeah,
right,
Christopher.
Do we have to have like performance rights for this music?
Yeah, we would do, but let's just hope no one mentions it.
If you like this podcast, do not sue us.
So
and it was snowing anyway.
I know. Yeah.
It was snowing.
Still on the platform in the snow.
So losers, the Eurozone.
I think that's it, isn't it? Really?
GNOME 3, or us for losing Mike. We've pretty much covered it all.
And I'm going to the Eurozone, so.
Let's leave the last... Well, I said this last time, but let's leave the almost last word to Jeffy, who says, I think Linux as a whole has done well this year. Just look at all those humble indie bundles. Most of those games run on Linux. Look at the release of Scrivener. Look at the impending release of Linux-compatible Netflix.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Linux has done really well.
And Maya is due out soon as well, isn't it? Add that list.
Yeah. It's post-desktop Linux. It's Linux actually doing things.
Yeah.
One person has, but we'll ignore him, pops up with the question of, is this the year of Linux on the desktop?
Yeah.
Because it's just not relevant anymore, where Linux has branched out into so many different fields.
Linux is everywhere.
Branches in fields.
Yeah. Joe Brockmeyer actually had a really interesting article on Linux.com about... the highlights of Linux from open source from the last year is worth checking out if you're interested. I can't remember off the top of my head, but stuff like Cassandra and all sorts was on there. It was a good list.
Cool. So with such
actually Mike, I have one more thing.
No way.
And it's a pub quiz.
Oh no. Have you prepared a pub quiz?
I've got 10 questions.
Awesome.
Taken from the Linux format pub quiz. So I haven't actually come up with the questions.
Are they really all then?
I was going to split you into two teams. So Mike and Andrew sat together. Effie and John have sat together.
Didn't we run this like 3 years ago?
Yep, so. They're exactly the same questions. I've just taken 10 questions out.
I didn't take part of the pub quiz.
Yeah, pens. There's a pen for you.
Oh, Graham's really organised.
I'm going to ask you to write down the answer and then I'll do the answers
so
straight after.
So 1 to 10?
Yeah, 1 to 10. And then whoever wins 2011.
I was going to say 20 quids.
Okay. So it's okay, I'll ask you the question, you write down the answers to prove that it's you, and then I'll tell you what the answer is.
Play along at home, everybody.
Okay, so the first question is, who drew the original picture of Tux?
I think that might be Larry Ewing.
That was Richard Stallman, wasn't it?
I have. No,
yeah, well, if John spells it wrong, then we win. Because he's probably only overheard.
No, I did have the tip of the name on my.
Okay,
phone.
So what have Effie and John? What have you got?
Larry Ewing.
Okay, they get 1 point. And what have you two got?
Larry Ewing, but we said it first.
You
we
did
get
say
two.
It first. Yes, I was a witness to both of those. Yes, so you both get 1 point because this is Christmas. Sucks. Okay, who originally wrote the VI editor?
No, I can see Mike writing again. Andrew, speak.
I think that's right, isn't it?
I think that's right.
Yeah. In your face.
I have no idea.
Team two.
Okay, so John and Effie, have you got an answer?
No.
Blank.
Okay, 0 points for that question.
It was Bill Joy.
It was Bill Joy. Well done.
Maybe you could be team A and we'll be team one.
Oh,
if,
nice.
If that doesn't offend you.
I like that, yeah.
Okay.
What about Kinetic? And
an easier question for number three. Who wrote the Minix operating system and in 1992 posted an email with the subject, Linux is obsolete?
Heresy.
It was Bill Gates, wasn't it? Andrew. Honest.
Yeah.
Let's see if they write down Bill Gates now.
That is him.
I think I'm wrong.
I really didn't want to put you both under pressure. It's all a bit of fun.
I'm not under any pressure. I think it's genius.
Mike knows all of these. I know none.
I didn't choose the hard ones.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Disraeli.
The Clash.
Okay, Mike and Andrew, do you want to say what the answer is?
You should say first.
Yeah, Andy Tannenbaum.
It was, yes, Andy Tannenbaum. Yes. Yes. Okay, well done. One
so
point.
It's three to
one
us
point.
And two to them so far.
I couldn't remember his first name.
Thanks
just
for
Tannenbaum.
Reminding me that you're ahead.
You just put Tannenbaum.
Tannenbaum's all right.
Ah, what a swizz.
Okay, question number four. Who wrote the original Unix shell?
Hang on. I just broke some glasses.
The original Unix
the original
shell.
Unix shell.
What was his first name?
I don't
it
know.
The first name is, it doesn't matter.
Okay, it doesn't matter. That's cool. We probably won this.
We might get a point for that.
Possibly.
Do you two want to, John and Effie, do you want to give us your answer?
I'm guessing Donald Knuth.
No, it wasn't.
It was Bourne.
It was Stephen Bourne.
I wanted to say Jason Bourne,
of
but
course.
So, just to clarify again, it's 4-2 to us.
It's 4-2. I'm glad you're adding them up because I'm not.
Yeah, it's really important this because.
Okay, question five.
Come on, John, come on.
Which port does SSH listen to the server?
I think.
Mike doesn't know.
Okay, Mike and Andrew?
No. I think 22.
John and Effie?
20?
22? He put 20.
Okay, I think you did put 20. So, Mike and Andrew win on that one.
Yeah, 5-2.
So, 6. What is the numeric user ID of root, also known as the super user account?
Oh, my Lord.
No one's going to trust anything I ever write in Linux format again after this.
Yeah, maybe this was a bad idea.
Yeah. Can I tap John's job as the new expert of Linux?
Any ideas?
Well, let's see, because these guys are going to change it.
We're not going to change it.
You've got to answer first.
1,000.
It's 1.
It's 0.
Is it 0?
Oh.
We got 1
wrong. So neither of you get a point.
I didn't know.
Okay, neither of you. Calm down.
So it's 5-2.
GNOME is a popular desktop environment.
Is it?
Yep, apparently this is what Paul
that's
wrote.
A lie.
What did GNOME originally stand for?
I know this. I actually looked it up the other day.
They're both teams looking confident with this one.
Oh yeah. John's there's written Gary's unusable. Well, I know this anyway, so let's see what.
I'm
okay.
What they write.
You get it if you're close. This is Christmas.
GNU Network Object Model Environment.
Yes. Yay. Yeah. Well done. Well done.
So.
Well done, Effie and John.
6-3.
I'm 6-3.
And so the next question, you know, for balance, is what does the K in KDE stand for?
What?
I know what it used to stand for.
Yeah, well, okay, it's what it used to stand
it used
for.
To, because it doesn't actually stand for anything.
It doesn't,
anymore.
Doesn't mean anything, though.
So, that again?
Pretty cool.
It doesn't stand for anything anymore, but originally when Matthias Etterich created it, it meant something.
Is it 96 that they started KDA?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, 96.
How old were you back then?
Well, in 96? Yeah. I was 10.
I was writing Spectrum programs back then.
Okay, so Andrew and Mike obviously know. If you make a guess about the K, knowing all you do about free software, what would you say it stood for?
We know this, so they should have a guess.
Just think in those terms of...
Free software.
Not very fashionable Linux people.
Not very fashionable Linux people.
Yeah, what would you call something that began
sandals.
With a K?
I have no idea.
So it's cool, isn't it?
It is cool with a K. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
I have no idea. That's
so
bad.
It's 7-3.
Okay.
No question,
yes, I feel this is going to be a bit of a landslide, especially with the next question. In which year did Linus Torvald send out his email announcing his new free operating system? It's now, you should all know this.
It's not going to be big and fancy and professional like GNU.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Now that we're all winning GNU.
He was right.
Considering the year that's just closing.
Oh, that's a massive giveaway.
It's Christmas, Mike.
No.
You're already 7 points in the lead.
You said I would win 20 quid if I get this right.
Mike doesn't want to win. He wants to humiliate and crush them, rub their noses in
really
dirt.
Do.
John and Effie?
1991.
It is 91, yeah. It was the 25th of August. And the last question for the Awesome Person of 2011 Award, Awesome Team of 2011. Which movie contains the line...
I know this.
It's a Unix system. I know this.
I spent ages trying to get those questions in some sort of order.
So they've written...
Any ideas, you guys?
We wrote Tron.
I wouldn't have a clue about this.
They wrote Tron. We wrote Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
It is Jurassic Park.
9-4, Andrew. Well, we did it.
That's incredible.
Andrew and Mike are our winners, but there's no losers in this game.
Well, no, there really are, because we won 9-4. That's a huge victory.
There were no football questions in there.
This time next year we'll do football questions.
That's a winning margin of 125%.
Listen, it's the taking part that counts.
Arty questions.
Anyway.
Related to design.
Even this under proportional representation.
I know.
The majority
now. I think it was probably a bad idea. I should have put some easy questions in there.
It's a good job.
Those were easy questions.
Well,
What?
You got 9 out of 10.
You can't be serious about that.
To be honest with you, I'm really shamed by not getting the port that SSH uses and the developer for Bourne Shell. And Bill Joy as well, I feel like I should have got. But everything else, I'm not too sad about.
Yeah, I'm a bit ashamed about the roots thing. I didn't realise
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It takes everyone to make Linux strong, and you've all done a great job this year. It's been a great year for Linux 2011. It's been a great year of podcasts. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, for taking part. And we'll see you again sometime in 2012.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Feliz Navidad.
Servus.
Yeah, happy Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
$1 billion, 1,000 people, 16 terabytes, 20 trillion different combinations of hardware. $1 billion, 1,000 people, 16 terabytes.
I can't really see it taking off.
Pink Pony is Tron with ponies. Pink ponies. Pink ponies, naturally. Pink Pony is Tron with ponies. Pink ponies, naturally. $1 billion.
KD4
is evil.
KD4
is mad.
KD4
is dead easy to use.
Yeah. KD4
is evil.
KD4
is mad.
KDE is fantastic. Just use KDE, idiots. Really convoluted.
And it's not running on the herd. $1 billion. TWF.
And now it's time for the news.
Packages. Packages, why? I discovered herd NG. Pink ponies, naturally. Pink ponies, why? I discovered herd NG.
Is it evil or is it not? Mad, crazy world.
contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all given up our day jobs to become a Jackson 5 tribute band.
And it's not running on the herd.
I want to preserve my elite herd status.
Contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all given up our day jobs.
Sending penguins to jail.
Really?
I do like mono.
Really? Really?
Linus is such a celebrity.
Mad, crazy world.
Mono.
Mono.
No?
Never.
Kibby bite. Ponies.
That's what I initially thought. It didn't make any sense.
Let's do it for maximum comedy impact and save Mankey Monkey to the end, shall we?
I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Pink ponies, naturally. Pink ponies.
Why? I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Is it evil or is it not?
Mad, crazy world.
T-shirts, stickers, mugs, hats.
I'm not wearing a hat.
He's that good.
Oh, yeah.
Idiots.
As is my right as boss of this mini section, just use KDE. That's why my spectrum had 512k.
Paul, what have you got?
Think of the penguins.
Sounds great. Paul, what have you got?
Sponsor a penguin.
That's a kind of separate issue.
Which is obviously conclusive proof that Microsoft loves us and wants us to be happy.
Ponies, ponies, DWF.
I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Pink ponies, naturally. Pink ponies.
Why? I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Is it evil or is it not?
Mad, crazy world.
KDE is fantastic.
I personally haven't touched it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I can't really see it taking off.
How many more package managers do we need?
Fork you.
I've installed the Herd, and it's graphical and it's great.
There is one more thing.
As I seem to be playing the role of devil's advocate, I'm going to say no.
Life just doesn't work like that.
Suck it down, losers.
Why?
You know, I've been thinking about it these last few minutes.
I think it's really bad.
I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Pink ponies, naturally. Pink ponies.
Why? I discovered Herd NG. I discovered Herd NG.
Is it evil or is it not? Mad, crazy world.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free hackers. You'll be free hackers.